So, second part, selling content. Paywalls is the main area, as I said. The big issue with paywalls is as soon as you put a paywall up, obviously your audience is reduced dramatically. So the amount you can charge for advertising is reduced dramatically. So if you're going to put a paywall up, you have to account for a massive reduction in advertising income. Equally, your distribution is going to be limited. People are not going to share your articles if they know that their friends are not going to be able to read them. Search engines aren't going to index it as highly if fewer people are reading it. So you're going to reach fewer people on all fronts. You're going to have to be able to make more from advertising. And the main reason for putting up paywalls is, firstly, you can collect data about your readers. So you can sell advertising. In a way, it's going to be cheaper because there are fewer people, but you can charge more per person because you have more information about them. You can say how much they earn, where they live, and so on. Most news organisations, content organisations, have gone for metered paywalls as a way to solve the problem of distribution. So they'll say people can have the first 10 articles for free, and that means that people can share them. It means that it will perhaps register better on search engines. But also, if you want a lot of articles, you still have to hand over your details and your money, and we can sell that. Subscriptions are related. Crowdfunding, where you raise money from a group of people. Tip jars, where you ask for a donation, a tip when people read your content. Freemium content, so you get some content for free, but particular types of content you have to pay for. Ebooks, reports, all different approaches that people have adopted. So in Canada, a number of news organisations, actually including the National Post, published some of their content as ebooks as a way of charging for it. They brought together archive content. They did original investigations. It's not been very successful. It was initially successful. They hit 10,000 readers very quickly, but they struggled to then get to the 25,000 reader target. And I think that's quite common with ebooks, is maintaining momentum is a big issue. You can get to a certain level quickly, but it tails off then. So how do you keep talking about these things, keep driving readers? In terms of crowdfunding, CrowdReport has been an interesting experiment in Germany. There's another one in the Netherlands. There are quite a few platforms now that work quite well in allowing you to raise money for your content project. Kickstarter, Indiegogo are quite well known general purpose platforms. But if you're looking at journalism in particular, I'd look at Beacon. And in fact, one of their students, like Lyra McKee, raised $6,000 for her investigation using Beacon. The key thing about that is you have a month to hit your target. You set the target. But you really have to work hard. And the last week is absolutely crucial. Most of it is in the last week as that deadline approaches. Using social media doesn't seem to work. Lyra is not the only person I've spoken to about this. Steve Matheson, who is based in Birmingham, also used Beacon to raise money for a couple of his projects. And he found directly emailing people, directly messaging people on Facebook was how he got most of his money. And Lyra likewise. I emailed a lot of people directly in that last week saying, Lyra's doing this, it'd be great if you could support it. So you do have to kind of go out and drum up support. And it has to be something, I think, that people are willing to support. Investigative stuff. There was a great one on, I can't remember what site it was now, it wasn't Beacon, but someone said, I want to go to every spa, I want to go to 12 spas and write reviews. So, right, okay, you want us to pay money for you to go and have a spa weekend 12 times? This doesn't sound like something that's going to benefit society at large, really. And she got a bit of flack on Twitter, this particular individual, for doing that. So I think it has to have a social benefit. It has to be something that people buy into. often people aren't paying for content, they're actually supporting a process, supporting a cause. Lots of paywalls have failed. Dallas Morning News, the Wolverhampton Express and Star. The Glasgow Herald seems to have worked, and this week the Times announced it was making a profit for the first time since 2001. But a large part of that is cutting costs as well. It's not just about bringing money in, it's about keeping costs low. So then you've got social services, as I describe them, events, membership, clubs, selling merchandise. Although you're selling a product with merchandise, often you're actually selling kind of identity. So sometimes it's about merchandise that is a badge that people wear for their membership of a particular group. Donations, crowdsourcing are often social acts as much as paying for content. And of course, public funding. You know, the BBC, its funding is based on providing a social service in many ways. The Guardian's trust funding is based on a social objective. It's not about content. The Texas Tribune is just one of a number of news organisations that has taken more and more of its income from events over the last few years. The magazine industry has massively moved towards events in the last 5 years. For many, the magazine itself doesn't make a profit, it's the events that they put on which do. And the magazine serves to build branding and an audience for the events. If you think of the Good Food exhibition that was on at the NEC recently, I'd love to know how much money the Good Food exhibition makes and how much money the magazine makes. And these can be professional events, they can be hobbyist events. The Guardian is doing this now, the Times is doing this now. The Daily Mail is doing it now. Sometimes it's about kind of collective negotiating. So the Mail's membership is less about events and things like that, and more about vouchers, discounts and things like that. But once people are a member, they use that data to sell them to advertisers and agencies. And if you want to know more about events, the American Press Institute has got a really good guide to making money from events for content publishers. I'll give you all this at the presentation that goes with this. So number four is products. The fourth type of making money online is from products. We've got merchandise again. Merchandise that's not directly tied to identity, e-commerce, affiliate schemes. Affiliate schemes are where you act as a go-between. So Amazon, eBay, you can sign up to become an affiliate. If you put an advert on your site or if you link to a product on your site using a particular link, then you get a cut of the money if someone buys that. Very small amounts normally. So if someone buys a 40 quid box set that you've mentioned on your site, then you might get 40p or a pound, something like that. Obviously, if you're talking about big items like holidays, cars, that's going to be more significant. The advantage of affiliate schemes, obviously, is it costs you nothing to set up. You don't have to ship things that people buy. You don't have to process payments. All you are is just bringing people through the door. And a lot of publishers have used that as a bridge to becoming e-commerce sites themselves. Because, and this is kind of where things have mixed up quite a lot, is it used to be if you were selling T-shirts, you would advertise in the NME. And the NME wouldn't sell T-shirts. But now, of course, if you're selling T-shirts, you can just make yourself findable online. You can buy advertising on Google. You might not advertise in the NME. But equally, NME can become a seller of T-shirts itself. It's very easy to do so now. So the NME, actually a lot of the NME's income is through selling tickets for concerts, selling merchandise. The circulation of the NME has gone down to about 10,000 in the last few years. It sells very, very few copies now of the NME. But they were ahead of the game in changing their business model in terms of where they make their money. Marie Claire is now an e-commerce site. Harper's Bazaar has an online marketplace, which is also sponsored. So again, you see this mix of business models. That moves us quickly onto services. If you have expertise in your organisation, if you have access to people with expertise, then often training is quite a useful way to tap into that. Journalism.co.uk reports on developments in the media, but it also offers training courses and it has events. And often what it will do is it will hold an event like News Rewired, where they bring together people from the industry that their journalists already have contacts with. So they sell tickets to that event, and then they will hold training on the day before and the day after. So if you've bought a ticket to that event, they will say to you, why not come and do some training the day before and pay some more money for that? Webinars are a kind of a version of this. So those are like online training or online events. You don't have to physically be anywhere. And again, it might be discussions with experts in that particular field. Content marketing, I've mentioned, offering PR services is increasingly common as well. I mentioned it earlier with The Economist, Trinity Mirror does this. Consultancy. So you have experts in your organisation or you have access to experts. And a lot of this is about kind of identifying what are the assets of a particular organisation, and often content publishers and particularly news organisations, they have people who know a lot about their subject area, they know a lot of people, and so they know how to tell great stories, so they know how to get stuff in the news, they can access people who are great experts for consultancy or webinars and so on. And data services is another side of this, where it might be gathering information on pricing or performance or whatever and selling that on. This is the case in fashion. There are a number of new fashion startups which are based on fashion data, what people are buying, what people are selling, trends and so on. It can be very, very lucrative. There's a magazine called ICIS that is published by Reed Business Information, and it's about the chemicals industry. And they have a funnel approach, which is that the website is free, the magazine costs a little bit, but for the price data on chemicals, it's thousands of pounds. And the idea is to use the free in the magazine to drive people towards the most lucrative part of their business. As an organisation, they have data journalists gathering that pricing data, and then other journalists writing analysis and news around that. But it's all designed to get people to pay for the data. And their customers save a lot of money by knowing about prices and what's cheapest and so on. ProPublica sells data. Health business, transportation. Health Service Journal launched an intelligence product this year, which was again based around data that its journalists collected. Let's add some analysis, let's sell that to the health sector. Good Housekeeping has always had a research institute. It made it a kind of a business in its own right. And publishing magazines has been a kind of a regular business model. It's called client publishing in the magazine industry. You'll see Manchester United magazine or Tesco magazine or Sainsbury's magazine. These are published by magazine publishers using their in-house skills. Sometimes it's about the business, sometimes it's just aimed at those customers. And finally, tools. Probably the least common type of revenue stream, but apps, freemium models where you get free features and you have to pay for more advanced features. Again, you know your audience, what problems do they have, what tools do they need to solve them. Magazine industry, again, is a good example of this. Marie Claire didn't just put its magazine in an app. They created the Beauty Genius, which is a series of tutorials, kind of help on makeup. Men's Health has a workout app. Photography Week has a photography app. Because these people who read Men's Health want to get fit. That is their problem. Let's give them a tool to help them get fit. To record how long they've exercised for, or time them, or give them tutorials. Likewise, I want to take better photos. I want to be beautiful. So often, again, content organisations know what problems their readers have, and that gives you an insight into products that you can create to serve that need to add value. So that's kind of a run through. It's taken longer than I intended, but that's a run through of the many, many ways that content publishers online make money. Not from content itself, but from what they know about their particular market and the supply and demand in that market. And I would kind of come back to that supply and demand and think, if you're doing some sort of enterprise project, who is this audience, who is the market, what do they already have, what is already supplied, and what do they need? And that might be that they need content, it might be that they need events, that they need tools, that they need services. And those are the things that you should be looking for. The other side is, I did mention about costs as well. People often focus on revenue, and you should also focus on the costs. The big competitive advantage that organisations like BuzzFeed and Huffington Post and Vice have, and Refinery29, is they don't have the costs of print and distribution. Publishers like Trinity Mirror and Sky have still to maintain all of those very high cost production aspects. So if you can keep your costs low, sometimes you can have business models that wouldn't support a broadcast or a print operation. Okay? So I'm going to leave it there, and that gives us a little bit of time, for a bit of discussion.